we are no longer teaching as a principal. I'm forever doing admin work. We are not doing what we're supposed to do, that is to teach our kids. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, also from Haile. And the last one is Honorable Mr. Mann.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also echo the compliments of my colleagues on a very well prepared, very detailed and clear presentation. And as a result, I will have just four questions, and they are very short. Firstly, I realize the objective of the school, the objectives, like the development of a key capital and developmental state, improved performance, public service. From the presentation, one could easily conclude that this is achievable. But there is also this overriding aim, which is emphasized also by the minister, that is to produce public service cadres that will soldier against maladministration, fraud, corruption, and unethical behavior. I would like the professor to please elaborate on this. How do the causes listed address these very serious challenges of fraud and corruption? Because that is the biggest problem that we have with the public service at present. Then again, I just have to consider our own situation, that we have been happy overseeing this Palama, and now it becomes a school of governance. Here I'm reminded of the PCTA, which was then transferred from our portfolio committee on public service and administration. It's now under higher education. Will we see the same happening with the school, or will it continue to fall under this present PC? In the presentation, the professor also touched on faculties. I'm just interested in what faculties could be there. I know that we have universities which are unique, like Medunsa, where you only deal with medical practitioners. Will this be more or less the same? I know, for instance, that in local government, the MMs and other officials are expected to have a B-Admin qualification. Will B-Admin courses be relevant to this? Then, finally, I'm just curious now, when I consider the roadmap, it appears that most work was done last year, 2012. Maybe it started 2011. And this year you'll be having your first cohorts graduating. And the roadmap does not tell us much about what will happen between 2013 and 2018. And yet, 2018 is put there as the date when it will be fully fledged. I would have thought that when it produces its first graduates, then it is fully fledged. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for very engaging questions that you have raised. I heard that Honorable Mziman has thanked you as well, but surely it was quite engaging question giving also. thinking in terms of the new school of government. Maybe I should just quickly also on my side just thank the new vision that comes with the skills training for the public servants. Because we normally do oversight, we do see a lot of other weaknesses, and one matter that we normally raise as this committee, which is non-collaboration in terms of the way that government does, working in silos. You know that we normally talk about the collaboration of institutions, and part of it, we do still want to reinforce it as this committee, because many times and often, there's no synergy in terms of the number of activities that take place. And you see it much easier once you listen to various presentations. Possibly part of what will be addressed by the school will be that aspect. Because education, you won't even see the larger impact once you deal with it. But more than anything else, the kind of cadre that the public service must have, the one that we envisage, that is one thing that we're looking forward to, because we definitely do not have. We do talk about the outcome for public service and administration, which is the department where Parliament is located, which also have the issue of the civil society along it, on the outcome, where we believe that the citizens of our country don't really appreciate who we are, because nobody takes concerted effort to also tell them that we are this kind of a country, this is what we are trying to do, this is where we've got weaknesses, but we are making inroads along this one. And that is a major weakness, because if you see people banning police vehicles, their own community halls and so on and so on, it therefore means there's something that we're actually not doing very well. But it doesn't end with them. It also comes to our public cadres of the public services. It is no cadership in terms of the work. That is why then we are challenged now by this gauge of corruption, where we realize that, for them, most of them are stealing. Some of them think it's right to do so. Even when they get salaries, they must also get extra income. So that's part of showing there's no cadership, and therefore, part of Palama, in our opinion, we think it's going to address also, that side where people don't really appreciate who government is, and even in their work, they, instead of closing up where they get, they actually abuse the gaps that are there for their benefit, and therefore that's selfishness, and it's not what we really want, and we're losing quite a lot because of that. What we're looking forward, that the new School of Government is going to look into those areas. Quite quickly, just to indicate that you talked about the uniqueness of the school and some of the aspects that are there. Yes, I agree that government has its own way of doing things. It's a public entity, I can say, which looks into the well-being of citizens. You will be unique in that instance. But now, once you talk about the systems of government, especially the ones that we've overseen and the weaknesses, and you start to say to us, the IFMS, we all just think about all the presentations we had right before us, that the IFMS, we are not getting it right again. We've at some point had a joint presentation between public service and administration and national treasury. It's not getting anywhere. We're not satisfied as this portfolio committee on that oversight, and we're not confident. If you start mentioning it, we are not confident that then it means there's something like, we need to get it right first before we pronounce it proudly, that we're also going to be dealing with integrated financial management system. That's the IMF. It's just lacking. It's a major weakness. We're worried, and we just can't believe that for so long government can fail to have an integrated management, IGC system that can communicate. I was making an example one day in this committee, and members laughed at me. That in a chemist, you can go to a chemist somewhere if you've got a prescription. If you go to another chemist, they will tell you, you can't get that invoice. You can't get it twice. The other chemist, you got it in a particular chemist. Chemists can communicate amongst one another, but government can't. It's a weakness. And actually, also, because you will also depend on government to up. It's progress in terms of other areas. I just mentioned this as one of the major challenges that maybe sitting with CETA, sitting with the department, you'll have to raise that as a concern from our side. And once we're going to be using that, it should be sort of, you know, confidently everybody should know that it is really working. We want it to work. It's a good initiative, but it's not. We're not getting there. I don't know why, but we're not. And we're not happy. If possibly there can be progress on that, I know it doesn't fall entirely under Balama, but Balama is going to use it. That collaboration within the government then becomes quite critical. Well, Honorable Mohale has already addressed the issue of the legislative requirements, maybe from our side as legislators. You know, we need to know what is it that requires the law along that, you know, so that from our side we then have to sort of start to look into that as our task. That's the other part. And the other issue is just consideration that couldn't you consider maybe piloting for a particular number of years, you know, so that if something doesn't work, you don't start saying we're changing this, but you said from the pilot we've realized this and that, it's not so good, but this is quite excellent. The pilot has shown us that we can gear up so that we can have a synergy in terms of moving forward, you know. Starting something, you can't start and just move. You can say, okay, we'll just pilot for a particular number of years, maybe 2 years, 3 years, depending on how you like to do it. But you're actually piloting what you've already initiated as the presentation did, what you think is going to work for the country, and so on and so on. So that then you start to say, now we're out of the pilot phase. We are now gearing towards fully fledged new school of government, or now by then it won't be new. Just as a consideration again. We know that we have started to implement the CIP, you know, but well, it's one part of the program. We mean the entire pilot for the entire school. Okay. And then on the other issue that we would actually, you know, because we can't go to the nitty-gritties of the course. You know, it's an overall, this course, this way, this course. We've got an overall understanding of what you want to do. But we do have a major problem of skill retention in the public service. Like the member says, you know, at some point, sometimes when you train people too well, then other countries come, take them and so on. But would we also think of the skills retention, something that can attract those that are doing well, you know, incentives in terms of the training, the outcome, the impact on the implementation, and you know, how, when we see the outcome, how do we sort of make sure that we retain what is good, something of that nature, maybe to just give confidence in terms of, I know that it can't be yourselves only, that will be in collaboration with the public service itself, you know, because we have it. So meaning that the skills retention strategy possibly, you know, thinking about it and, you know, confidently trying to show us that we won't be liquid as we are. You know, we always have people that, you know, the DGs especially, who are not necessarily retained even at other levels. Okay, I think basically those are the issues. But what I also want to emphasize at the end, before you do a response, it's the issue of the basic values and principles governing the public service, which we have correctly captured. I'm sure we'll need to anchor that, and at some point there will be a need for a thorough engagement between the committee, yourselves, Public Service Commission, and the department, where we actually, you know, we need to amplify that, you know, quite vigorously, you know, in terms of the constitution, and I'm glad that part of your presentation captures on that. Maybe at the moment, let me allow you to deal with responses. I will break for tea after you have responded. I wonder if, I think that the break will take too much time. Because I was reminding about tea. So it means we shouldn't go too long because the tea will be too cold. But can I allow Balama to deal with the responses on other areas where they want to clarify? Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. Chairperson, I think the a number of questions. Some of the questions, if you allow me, that maybe I have a team here. I am with both from the ministry and from Palama that we have been engaging with these things together. And maybe before I go into specific questions, I will then allow through you, Chair, members that have been engaged with, especially from the ministry. I know on the question of PC, the Professor Blykes has been involved. On the issue of the school itself, there is a Professor Sefe that specifically advises the minister. And on the issue of the training that we do, the compulsory induction, I'll just ask Mr. Malana to talk to them. If you would allow the chairperson. Professor Sefe, any response to the specific question that we asked?
What I'll do is really, Madam Chair and honourable members, is to indicate that what Professor Molo was giving you was more, he was painting a broad canvas, and it would be a mistake if we read that as a solution that says no amount of work in terms of thinking needs to be done. And I think the questions that have been asked are really questions that are also beyond Professor Molo. These are some of the questions that the minister must answer. And also these are the type of questions that must be provided by the advisory task team that the minister has actually put together, because they'll be serving as, if you think of a university, there's what you call a university council that directs management in terms of what are the key issues, what business the university should be involved in. So some of those are actually beyond Palama itself, or beyond the current management. So the issue that I really want to emphasize is it's a question that was specific. Will the School of Government be ready in October? And I said, and I'll say that to members who are here, that when one thinks of a school, you think of the presence of a few things. And it helps members to create a mental template in which they can tick whether those things exist. The first one is what do we call the administrative capacity, because it is a structure or a facility that allows students or learners to register and to be captured, and also to record their progress or lack of progress. And that's the first thing, that you go there and say, is there an administrative governance structure? And the second one is a question of whether there are courses, because students or learners go to those because there are courses that are being offered. The third one is whether there are faculties, members of staff who are going to be teaching. I mean, and the last one is the issue of infrastructure. And I think what Professor Molo was saying is that as far as the administrative capacity, Palama as it stands can perform that function, because it has been servicing many public servants who have gone through its courses, even though those courses were largely outsourced. So the administrative capacity exists. And the issue that the members was also raising, and I'm responding, but they're more broadly without necessarily being too specific, because there's not the time and space, but it also links to some of the concerns that the members have raised, that if people come in here, what will be the impact and what will be the incentives? What we're saying is, we know that there are things to be fixed in the public service. I mean, if you take the Auditor General's report, what you find is a lot of concerns around expenditure. There's a lot of concern around consulting because the members and the public servants are not capacitated, and what they do, they rely on external people. And what the school intends to do is to say, let us identify all these areas of non-performance or poor performance, and then create courses that will assist members or public servants to be able to address those concerns. Sometimes you find things like hearing that expenditure and unauthorized. At times you find it is more out of ignorance of the law and process, not because people want to spend irregularly. And also, if there are ways in which these things can be corrected, and you find members don't even know that. So what we're saying is that the courses that are going to be designed will be courses that respond to specific and real, not imaginary problems. So this must be seen as interventions. As we go on, we will be able to present those courses. We'll be able to say, this is what comes from the AG, this is what comes from the Public Service Commission, this is what was identified by the Presidential Review Committee, this is what comes from the SCOPA, this is what comes from the Posterior Committee. These are the witnesses. And these courses, they will be able to draw a direct link that this one addresses, so that they are responsive. They're not just general courses. They are there to assist members to be able to do their work and to do it efficiently and to create a public service that is efficient, effective, responsive and accountable. That is the primary. So the issue of impact then will emerge once we start correcting that. So that is the courses, at the moment we will not be able to give that. But this is the thinking, as I said, this is a work in progress. But the first thing that the minister had to do is to make sure that there is leadership and the task team has been appointed for that purpose. The third one is Professor Molo did not emphasize that the beginning of April will be on the recruitment drive to get the suitably and appropriately qualified people. And the template that will be used will respond to some of the concerns that members are raised, that it's well and good to get to say you're going to have this, but if the teachers themselves are not suitable, the product itself will not be suitable. So that will be addressed. So see it as a work in progress. Then there's the issue of the infrastructure. Even there, Professor Molo indicated the number of consultations, remember, facility, that when you go to a university or a school, you would expect that there'll be classrooms, there'll be lecture rooms and all that. And I also indicate to members of the ANC that they must also think that we're also moving beyond the physical. We are now going into cyberspace. I mean, there are universities that now exist in the cyberspace where there's online learning, so we must also consider that possibility, that we must not be restricted by the notion of a real body that you see there or in a building. But we are thinking of, but this will be stuff that ultimately is the responsibility of the advisory committee. But I also saw some of the concerns that the members have raised as a homework that we should be paying attention to. So if the answers do not come now, what we have recorded are those specific issues that you have actually put. So I also do not want members to, for instance, if you talk about there's a line that was put there, advice on time, and the question that was asked, what would be how the turnaround time? And of course, that statement, I think it is a statement that probably in the excitement of members of the people who are putting together this, they think it's actually advice on time. I cannot tell you that that's a wishful thinking, even though it's in a slide. Because what does it really mean? Does it mean if a teacher has a problem, then he can go to the school and the school will immediately give that. So some of these things are, that's why I say, let's look at it as thinking aloud. But what is more important is answering the most basic questions. If you say the school is going to exist, does it have the administrative capacity? Does it have the staff? Does it have courses? Does it have infrastructure? And that to me is more critical. And the school will become sophisticated as it continues. Remember, no school, no university, when it was built, it starts first as an idea. I mean, I went to a school where there were only three courses, three faculties. And now, and 30 years later, it has many faculties, that it has even courses that they never thought they would offer. This is what normally happens. But for now, we are going to start small, and we're going to make sure that it is by the beginning of October or in October, there is a launch, and we'll be working from there backwards. So let me just make one statement and leave this. Consider the presentation as work in progress, your questions as simply things that have been flagged for us to pay attention to, and some of them may require that the advisory committee to respond to them, because I'm glad that members of the advisory committee are here, because that will be, they are the governance of the institution. And I don't think Professor Molo should assume that he can answer the questions that they themselves have not asked and that they have not thought through, but he can only answer those that are practical, especially the issue of funding that he can try to handle. And Professor Plankis can comment on the induction program, because that is a program that is actually taking place right now and has been continuing. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm sure you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I'm reminded continuously when I interact with this committee, there are a number of modes and ways to get from Cape Town to Johannesburg. The question is that we need to get to Johannesburg, and the issue here around the establishment of the school has got lots of issues that need to be resolved in a big way. Just to answer in a way, what is on the issue of impact, I thought I need to answer that question. The number that we have currently is that 800,000 employees from 146 departments needs critical skills in all occupations. Although a large percentage of the workforce is qualified in terms of university tertiary qualifications, there are gaps in the proficiency about the knowledge about the job, but also in some of the content areas of the job. That's the first number. The second number is that we're getting 35,000 new staff joining the public service annually. And clearly, those new staff will form the focus of the compulsory induction program. What is important, and one of the things that will come out of our continuous interaction with the process towards the school, but also the processes with regards to the content, the curriculum, the content design, research about it, to make sure that the different programs respond adequately to the needs of the public service, is the understanding that the proper assessment needs to be done in terms of the five categories. There might be other categories, but that is the broad band of target groups that DG gave earlier in the slide, to be able to determine, because when you appoint people, if you haven't been in the job, the reality is that if you haven't been in a particular job, you will not necessarily have all the skills and competencies that job requires. That's why when people do interview and recruitment, they look at what are the minimal aspects of development that needs to happen for this person in the job, and that's why you then do a comparative assessment between different candidates for a job. So the idea is to do a thorough assessment of what are the competency and skill sets required in the job. Now you have two problems here. The one is related to the post itself, because deputy directors directors or directors or chief directors, as you go up the chain and down the chain. There are generic skills that are required, but then they are specific to the content of the job, which relate to the content of the specific sector that that person operates in. And then that's also related to the particular functional area where that person performs in. So there's lots of work that needs to be done around that to make sure that the training programs are requisites commensurate to the capabilities required for the person to be fully functional within these jobs. So the key thing then is to continue to keep in the back of our minds that to build a public service through training and development one also includes coaching and mentoring. So there is a responsibility from supervisors within the public service to help with the coaching and the mentoring. And then the training is one way of intervening. Now, we shouldn't see training and development as a panacea for what's happening in the public service. It's just one aspect that needs to be fixed. It's like the chicken and the eggs. Another chicken and all the eggs. The chicken and the eggs. So you need to sort out, make sure that the chicken is able to lay eggs, but also make sure that you're able to protect those eggs. And that's the whole thing that we need to do, that we also collectively looking at. So there's a combination of net interactions between. This is another matter that relates to impact. Because I know this one is coming up regularly. So I'm giving you the 800,000 numbers of 146 departments. I'm giving you the 35,000 numbers in terms of new people entering the public service. What a skill development assessment, skills plan assessment is saying to us is that within 10 years' time, 40% of the public service will be new employees. 60% of those will be in the public service, the other 60%, but it's going to be a need to continuously upskill. In a continuous basis, those 60% is left in the system. So the point is that the task is huge if you want to come to a capable, competent, agile public service. So it's not about a matter that we, for now, we can't even think about the question of degree. The only point that we can think about our degrees is where we need to see how the university qualification, how do we deal with the gap between the university qualification that the person has and the requirements of the job. So we need to find ways of fixing that gap between me having a degree, getting a job within the public service, but do not have the competence or the required competencies, the functionalities of a particular job. So that's the only way that we can start thinking about degrees. So degrees is not even close in terms of how the school is going to function to this. So it's about improving capabilities and performance of public service. And yes, the minister did raise the whole question of training, performance in the job, and needs to be conditions of promotions. How are we going to do that is a critical thing, but there are people starting to think about how do we reposition the public service, but also how do we draft the public service legislation, as the minister mentioned in the State of the Nation response. On budgets, what has been agreed to is that let me just speak about this. I've been perplexed with the understanding there's a conflict between the PC and the current Palama mandates. The PCTA firstly is located in the Ministry of Higher Education and Training in terms of that particular responsibility. We have, however, an odd thing about accountability where the funds sit on the public service budget in terms of the public minister's vote, but the functionality in the programs and accountability with delivery sits within the Minister of Higher Education and Training. That's a matter that both ministers know needs to be resolved ASAP. That's the first thing. The second is that the PCTA is responsible for accreditation. It's responsible for accreditation to a level from level 6 on the panel and to level 9 on the level 6 to 9. Level 6 to 7 in terms of the qualifications framework. That's what the PCTA is responsible for. So some of the training has been developed through, especially in particular the ones through the Consulting Industrial Program, is going to the PCTA. The other training responsibilities in terms of accreditation sits in the higher education arena. Suicide Education Training Qualifications Council. So we're not there yet, where we firstly, there's no conflict. Secondly, there's a working strategic linkages and a working relationship between the current Palava and the PCTA, because the PCTA needs to accredit the programs. And it's a good, it's actually good that the two, in many ways, doesn't sit in the same ministry. Because you need that independence on the accreditation, the quality assurance and the accreditation from the PCTA. So there is that particular continuum in terms of the Public Service Training Act that's critical. Just on another small matter, the issue of faculty, professors here, they touched on it. But the whole notion of faculty has got to do with what are the capabilities inbuilt within the school that deals with the core business. The core business of the school is to deliver a training curriculum and program for the public service. So to be able to put faculty together, you're going to need a section that looks at curriculum development, research and development, curriculum development, training implementation. You're going to need a section that looks at teaching and learning of staff and of students, if you like. You're going to need qualified, competent lecturers, facilitators, instructors. And what we're saying is that these facilitators, lecturers, instructors, there needs to be a healthy relationship on the one end between the universities and the school of government, so that the two doesn't, there's no necessary classical disjunction between what happens in the university and what the school is going to take over in terms of making sure people are competent for their jobs. That's the one thing. The other thing is that what the minister has been communicating in as a response to the State of the Nation address is that the people that's going to train will have to be people that's embedded in the public service, that understand how the public service operates. That understand, and they need to be principal people, they need to be people that is corrupt-free, there needs to be a track record of service of these people, that they are adequate models to be able to train. It's the same when we come to the members of parliament. Your part of your frustration is that you get trained by highly qualified people from the universities, but hasn't got a clue as to how parliament and legislatures work, what is the political dynamic, what is the political management of matters happening in parliament. We have the same here. So the question then is, you take somebody out of the treasury to come and train on public finance management administration. That person might have the capabilities of how the Public Finance Management Act operates in terms of processes and systems and procedures, but that person they don't necessarily have the capabilities to train, because to train adult also require a particular skill. There's issues of facilitation, issues of developmental theory, and issues of work. So there's a question that also we need to look at, how do we build the capacities of these people then. So the challenge is that we need to find a way of, and this is especially one of the responsibilities of the advisory task team, I would think, because they still need to have their own meeting to finalize their work program, is to be able to know that what type of people are we going to recruit and attract to be able to train, given the task of building capability amongst the public servants at all levels of government, but also within the legislatures and parliaments. So there's a number of things that needs to be done around this particular process. I don't think what we're trying to say to, but maybe want to say up front, there's no competition between the universities and the school of government. They can't be, because the university's outlook is about cognitive development, it's about critical, a higher level of critical thinking, scientific flow of knowledge production, etc. Here we're talking about professional and vocational training, so that people are able to do their jobs. That's what we're interested in. So there, serve as a change agent, as a facilitator, to be able to make sure that universities actually start to relook at their own curriculum for degrees and postgraduate degrees in relation to what the public service needs or in relation to what the state needs. And if there's a broader interpretation of what the state is and the state's not a party like some of my former colleagues interpret, then I think we're on the right path. But you're also responsible to help develop a paradigm shift as to how public service training and development, academic programs ought to look like. So there's also an opportunity for you to probably call all the public service schools, the schools of public service or public administration, if you like, in the country. Maybe a targeted approach to the big ones and the small ones, and say, could you please tell us how you are able to influence or respond to the whole notion of public service training? Thank you, Chief.
There were specific questions that were asked. For example, the first question from the Honorable Queen is about, you speak of the induction course. Can you share with us how that looks? That was the first question. Just a summary of how it looks is that the structure of the program, the compulsory induction process, includes an orientation session with 5 modules. The first module is about understanding the constitution and the mandate, the public service mandate. What is your mandate as a public servant? That's module 1. Module 2 speaks to working in the service delivery system. I go in there, this is a service delivery system, what is my role? How do I work in the service? Module 3 focuses on ethics. What is it that is being an ethical, honest, and considerate public servant? Module 4 is about professional public servant. If I am a professional public servant, what is it that we mean? And the last module, module 5, understanding the public finance administration purpose. That is in short what the compulsory induction is all about. Now the second one is the questions that were raised by Honorable Mare. And I think some of them I think one thing is the point that you're making, why is this compulsory? Why is this marketing? Should be compulsory, you know, and I think you're making this thing. But you are asking how will we ensure that the people that we are training are the right ones. I think those are some of the things that we need to take out as we go out of here. And as the recruitment drive comes in, and say what are the tenets of a good trainer for us to have this kid that we're talking about. And I think Professor Plaine spoke to the issues of the university versus this school of government. But in one way, one cannot deny the fact that there will have to be strategic partnerships. Resources are limited. But it can't just be a free-for-all. The relationships must be structured. And those strategic relationships will have to be there. In areas of research, we have to be proactive, acknowledge the capacities that are on there, which also goes into the question of Honorable Musiman speaks to the question of will there be relevant in terms of the public administration courses. There will be that relevance because that synergy always has to be there. And it's all about the same country. And we have learned lessons from what other countries are doing. But Chairperson, I'm trying just to be quick but on those questions. And the question of, hey, how are you going to capture the youth and motivate them to be there? The very same inculcation of value systems and ethos actually works on the conscience of those people, and that's the endeavor. To say, as a South African, who are you? Your conscience is triggered to ensure that in whatever I do, let me be motivated to do this. We will take the list of those suitable candidates that are in the public service, because not everybody is a trainer.
the reaction time will just be like when you get a 911 call. You are as good as long as there is no denial in a particular area of the public service that things are not kosher, things are not working well, we will respond as long as we're invited and we know. But however, working together closely with the monitoring and evaluation department, and also taking those early warnings from, and sometimes they're not early warnings, but signals that we get from the Public Service Commission report, the AG's report, we will actually be able to make those interventions. And then our just in time will only be just in time as long as we have the knowledge and information of what is happening in a particular area. Yes, the issue of and sure, I think the question of Honorable Tutoi, you are raising that issue of scarce talent and the change making that. How are we going to ensure that we retain those scarce skills and all those type of things? And it goes back to say, in certain instances, there is nothing that you will do if somebody is meant, you know, if somebody goes for greener pastures. But our arguments of the retentions of skills, it's that it is not only about the monetary incentives that only work, but it is an environment that you create that says, I belong here. And you gave an example of the military academy in Saldana. I fortunately, in one part of my life, I was the head of the military academy in Saldana. And it is not about the salary of those people in uniform. You become a soldier because you love the profession, because it creates an environment. And as long as the public servant, and in other countries, it is a pride for you to serve the public servant. And then those are some of the challenges that we have to inculcate to ensure that it is not about the money and what, but it's about the environment that you create, the love to serve your people, and all those type of value systems. Honorable Yekembe, you are saying, I think the question of PC, that's the question that really you are raising, the question of the PC that year. And that question of the PC, I think it has been answered, that PC that focuses on accreditation. But also it continues to show, to say that those courses that we have accredited, are they still up to scratch? And we do the training, but they actually know, we don't have any cross lines. We hold strategic meetings between the two institutions. We work together. We work together. I'm trying to, Chef Hatchon, to come to those questions. I think that you have raised. We have noted a lot of input that have been made. We are going to take them, and we are fortunate that the members of the advisory body are here. And as they go into their defining the roles and ensuring that we were able to reach those goals, they will then start even charting a path and say, when we say by 2018, we will be fully fledged and working, what are the issues that must be on board, and we will fill in those goals. But the most critical one is that all these plans and everything will not be worth this paper as long as they are known. There is no budget and funds. And Honorable Tweet, you asked that particular question, and I think that is the most critical one, because there is budget for today. What we have done, we realize that yes, money is very, it's competing. And it's not. What we have done, we said with the limited resources that we have in the current Panama budget, it should be all hands on deck for the School of Government. Because we need to start refocusing. We cannot afford the luxury of saying, whatever we have now, this is Palama and business as usual. We have said the seed capital, the seed funding that we have, should be the funding that we have now running the current Palama, that is the capital and the money that will actually seed at the best of this. That's where we make up with myself. The second one, I said to the Minister, we'll need your intervention. And say, there are, even within the portfolio, those budgets spend the money from the portfolio, that money that is going to be returned, that money should help. Because it's one thing to rush and say we need the budget without looking into what is it that we are having. So that is the approach that we are taking and say what is it that is not going to be spent within the portfolio. And that in itself, we'll see. Of course, the real players and stakeholders that have been on board during the planning processes, those role players is labor. The question that says to us, don't involve labor at the end in March. The stakeholders that during the planning, when we have the planning process developing the framework, labor was always on board. The representative of labor was, they were part of that, they are represented there. But Treasury was also on board. And Treasury has said to us, fine, we see this plan. Just at the time when you have finalized the framework, come to us because we would need an extraordinary intervention. And this thing goes to the question of the instrument, the legal instruments that are there. Whether within the perimeters of the current instruments, we can be able to do the School of Government. And we also went and said, you know, the Kenya Institute of Administration has now last year become, they've just created the Kenya School of Government. And we have been interfacing with them and saying, what an easy legislation have you had? Thank you, Chair.
Well, it's very interesting that comrades are enjoying the discussion and we are now getting longer because this is our first half meeting. I'm sorry to actually interrupt. We've got many members have a half past 12 meeting and they therefore have to be moving, and I thought maybe also we do need to just do some bit of admin and other issues that relate to Balama on our maybe next meeting also that we need to look into. But we must indicate that, well, it was a very, very good engaging discussion. You know, I understand why you actually elaborate because it's something that is something that is new. And what you are doing, you are actually trying to show us the kind of work that you have already touched. And I'm sure you have heard even from the members the discussion that the interaction. Members are really happy about the new approach on Palam. So that's the bottom line. You know, there's generally satisfaction, you know, in terms of the movement towards this new School of Government. And we're looking forward to have it functioning. Because, yes, of course, there are a number of other areas that we thought will never really impact better. If we didn't come with a new approach, possibly would be seated there lamenting and, you know, unsatisfied about the progress that we're doing in terms of the skills training. And therefore, we will, as members of Parliament, support the initiative because it's the best thing, it's a good initiative, and we want to believe it's going to take the country forward. We also appreciate, you know, the entrance of Minister Sisulu, who's innovating aspects of a number of other areas, and we think this is one of the good works that she's already impacting on, and we hope that this becomes, you know, as you are planning, quite good for the future of the country. Of course, just a few things is that we shouldn't, like I did mention, the lack of collaboration. You know, I would emphasize the issue of the integrated skills program that is driven by the Deputy President. Once all the things are done, let the new School of Government be seen to be capturing all the issues that are identified as weaknesses as well, you know, so that confidently we realize that we're moving up the gate, you know, as part of one area. And the other one is, of course, a number of other areas like the HR section of Parliament that we've realized that they're not functioning properly, lack of communication with the areas where they're supposed, the capacity thereof, with an example that I'll always give of the government pension fund where money can't be given to the rightful owner simply because HR doesn't give the pension fund the information and therefore people must suffer while it's their money in terms of what they delivered and served government. So those things are really worrying, and we believe that the existence of this new school should address those issues, which we're starting to think, you know, they're so far-fetched, we don't see our government going to be able to deal with that. We've realized as well the legal sections, you know, of the department are not capacitated sufficiently to deal with a number of other areas. with the realization that most cases, government loses the majority of cases, we know that there's a weakness, and we think it's one major area that must be tightened as well, because it poses a challenge for government. And also, it therefore makes government to outsource a lot. The government doesn't believe in majority of those legal people, and then they always hire, and then hire people, and therefore the issue of consultancy and the amount of money that is spent there, which is actually put on your doorstep to deal with it. You know, we can't have a government that is, you know, largely outsourced, because it therefore means we've got a share, but part of major services are sourced somewhere else. Well, the weaknesses of procurement, will never repeat them over and over, but I'll just indicate that part of our procurement, there are some major problems which actually impact on this problem we have now of corruption. Yeah, I think we are really satisfied about the work of today. We are glad about what Palama has brought to us as a parliament. We just need to reflect on the program quite quickly before we break. Honourable members, you might have had copies of the program on your emails and other institutions, and you'd know that last week was supposed to have a briefing by the National Treasury on its progress reports on the renewal of the entire procurement system of government, you know, because they've been working on that, and we did not have that meeting. The reason was because today part of the budget vote will be addressing that matter, and therefore we'll look forward to that. But the only bad thing that happened is that we're told on a Monday, you know, that they won't be able to do it, it's going to be the budget fresh for Wednesday, meaning that if they appeared now, talked about it, they'll still have to announce it. We accepted that, okay, let's allow the budget speech, but we don't accept that we're told on Monday. Because what it therefore meant is that we had to cancel a working session of the portfolio committee, which was supposed to be on a Monday. It's putting us on the back foot, because now we need to get space for the work that we did not do. And therefore, the department and the parliament really encourage entities of government together with government itself to work well with parliament. But sometimes, you know, things like this really brings a problem for us. We didn't work last week simply because, and it was a postponed meeting, simply because then we were told on Monday that we're doing a pronouncement. I'm sure they knew a long time ago. And it therefore, created difficulties for our program in parliament. We did have a good meeting today, which was the presentation of Palama. We all are happy about the work that took place today, but just to remind Palama that, you know, there will always be this thing that you move from Sunday, you went to Palama, now new school of government, which also puts you on a good footing. Most people don't know the work that you're doing, and therefore you must just know that you'll be paused with that question. Possibly part of the Indaba might capture, you know, also that, just to tell people that you are taking it. We are into a transition that is meaningful. Okay, the next week, which is the 6th of March now, we are inviting a presentation by the disability sector on all issues that we've been doing oversight on. It will be the presentation on the main obstacles, on the lack of disability devices. We'll be looking, for instance, on the past meetings, we have realized that the issue of transport for the disability sector is a big problem. The issue of Braille, you know, from the past oversight, even from the visits that we made, is a problem. The communication breakdown, I can ask even here how many know Braille language. It's also a problem. It seems as if we are not intending to sort of expand ourselves and be able to speak to the disabled, those who cannot speak. Which is a weakness, you know, from the side of government. Most government employees can use Braille. Members of parliament themselves, public representatives, can use Braille, which is a major problem as well. And also, there was an issue of parent participation, which also came out at some point. It seems as if most parents of the disabled learners don't get involved in the education, but we realize that also the location, you know, the state of poverty as well, who others can't go where the schools are, because they're not all over there, you know. There are specific areas. How then all those issues are addressed by government? Particularly once you talk, you would realize Parliament also feature somewhere there. And therefore, while we'll be having this presentation, was that there would be quite a lot. We'll also take the Braille Institute, you know, to give us the feedback, because we realize that somehow there are some obstacles in terms of digitizing the Braille books. The school that we went to in Busile and Limpopo, we were told that it takes 18 months for them to get the books. They put an order this year, it comes the next year. Those people are no longer in that same class. And therefore, what does it mean, you know, in terms of empowering the disability sector, the disabled, and therefore those are the issues to be looking into the next week. And therefore, because it means that will be presentations. They will be proceeded the next week, the other week of the 13th of March, by the responses from the Department of Basic Education on the areas that will be raised, the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, and also the Department of Public Service and Administration. You know, because we know that we are unable to reach the 2% threshold, that government is unable to reach it. Well, it put it to itself, but it can't reach it, and therefore, so that we keep talking about these things and finding some ways of how do we deal with it. So, meaning that is what we'll be dealing with the next week and the week after, focusing on issues of disability. Okay, and then now on the 20th, honourable members, it will be a cluster meeting. It will be a cluster of governance and monitoring, which involves COPTA, public service, monitoring and evaluation, national treasury. There it will be the role in Section 100 intervention, you know, as it's being effected. And we do have a model province where we went for oversight, which is Limpopo. We therefore are going to get Limpopo, because once we did an oversight, there were issues that came up, and we realized we need a follow-up after we get this feedback and to see whether, you know, whether it's important to not only have legislation developed, but to see if it's implemented, are there gaps, are there areas, is it workable or not, and if it's not, what are the things that we can do, and therefore we'll be focusing on Section 100, A and B, all of it, as it stands, and see the progress thereof, because from time to time, national government will be required to do interventions, and therefore, if we still have some gray areas, it might be problematic. Lastly, on the 27th of March, we will have a strategic planning workshop with entities of the Department of Public Service and Administration. We will outline the focus of that strategic planning. So far, this is where we are, and actually making sure that if people remember what we did, the high invitation that already signed, we were recent as well in terms of the focus and the discussion that will take place. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you, honourable members, for your participation. Thank Palama together with the Department of Public Safety and Administration, you know, in terms of the presentation and the discussion. We are looking forward, and we wish you all the best while we'll be moving towards the new school of government. At this point in time, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, the committee session is adjourned.